You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Josh. And get this, our newest upcoming live shows are being announced right now by me. On May 4th, we're going to be at the Warner Theater in Washington, D.C. And on May 5th, we'll be in Boston at the Chevalier Theater. Very fancy. And on May 6th, in a total surprise twist, we're going to be at Massey Hall in our beloved Toronto, Ontario, Canada, planet Earth. You can get tickets right now from Tuesday, March 14th until Thursday, March 16th. We have a pre-sale going. Just use the password SYSKLIVE. And then we have general on-sale tickets starting on Friday, March 17th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Go to Ticketmaster for your DC tickets. Go to the Chevalier Theater website for Boston, and then go to Ticketmaster.ca for the Massey Hall show in Toronto. We'll see you guys May 4th, 5th, and 6th, and I can't tell you how excited we are.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and Chuck's here too. It's just the two of us flying solo up in the friendly skies. And that makes this Stuff You Should Know.
That's right. Do you ever make up dumb songs in your head?
No, actually, I don't. I have other people's songs in my head a lot, but I don't make up my own typically.
I make up dumb songs in my head all the time.
Like what?
Oh, well, I mean, in this case, it's about Amaro, but it can be anything. Just something will happen, or there will be a brand or something in the house, and sometimes it's sounds like something else in a song, and so I'll just kind of do like a Weird Al version of that.
So
make it up.
Are they like ballads? Like is in your Amaro song, is Amaro falling in love and then jilted and then, you know,
no,
dies?
No. This is a riff. I'll go ahead and sing it if you'd like.
Yeah.
This one was because Dave Ruse helped us with this one. And when Dave sent this in, he said, you know, Dave's not much of a drinker.
Right.
So he said, but he tried Amaro for this and he said it tasted like Robitussin.
I did not see that. He tried it. He tried drinking for this. That's amazing. Way to go, Dave.
I think he wanted to see what it was like, you know, so he had a little sip and said it, you know, had that. And of course, Amaro is known for its sort of medicinal taste.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been singing. Here's a good example. And it's so dumb. When the bitter hits your tongue like a Robitussin, that's Amaro.
That was great.
So I do things like that all the time around the house, and my Emily and Ruby both think I'm just sort of strange.
I think it's very pleasant, and I wish you'd sing around me more.
You want to move in? You and Yumi can move in, and you'd be like, this guy's got to quit singing.
Yeah, we quickly move back out.
I'm having Amaro right now, actually.
Oh, yeah, I don't have any Amaro, and I would like some. I haven't decided which kind yet. I'm just going to start with one. But it's been a while for me.
I just, I thought, you know, I poured up a little, geez, what is the big side of a jigger? Is that an ounce or a half ounce?
I mean, it depends. You can get 2 ounce and 1 ounce, 3/4 ounce and 1/2 ounce. It just depends.
This looks like about a 1/2 ounce. I mean, it's just a couple of sips.
Oh, yeah. That's nothing.
Yeah.
What kind?
This is Maletti, and I'll get to how I acquired this at some point in the podcast.
Okay. Well, for those of you who are like, what the heck is Amaro? well, prepare to learn, because we're going to teach you what a maro is. And to put it in very basic terms, it is a bitter, sweet, or some people would just say just bitter, liqueur, which means a liqueur is any kind of alcohol that is sweetened with sugar. And so a maro is a specific kind of liqueur, a bitter liqueur.
That's right. And it is a digestif. Mm-hmm. It is largely Italian, although there are plenty of countries who make their amaros. And I never really thought of Jägermeister as an amaro, but apparently it's considered a German amaro.
Yeah, an herbal amaro.
Yeah, but it's generally Italian. The history is Italian, and there are, if you go to the amaro section, you're going to see a lot of Italian words.
Yeah, and you're going to be busting out your Italian accent quite a bit in this episode, I think.
Here and there. I don't want to overdo it.
So Amaro's been around. It's been a big hit in Italy and Europe, France, since the 19th century, at least, possibly back into the 18th century in some places. But in America, it wasn't until like the cocktail renaissance of the 10s, I guess.
Yeah.
That Amaro really kind of found its place. And I mean, it's been here for a while. Campari is a type of Amaro called the bitter red. And it's, I mean, everybody knows what Campari is, and maybe slightly fewer people know what Aperol is, but both of those are technically Amaro. But when you get into the world of Amaro, you realize like, oh, there's like a whole galaxy out there. But the one thing that they have in common is they have an alcohol base, a lot of bittering agents, and then all sorts of other botanical ingredients. And each one is proprietary. Each one is typically a secret. And each one is its own blend. Like, there's very few, if any, people making the same kind of Amaro. Like, I think every single kind of Amaro, even ones in the same group, are just different. They're not the same thing.
Yeah. And there are hundreds of Amari. And Amari is the plural. You wouldn't say different Amaros. If you want to get it right, you say Amari. And there are hundreds of Amari all over Italy. And like you said, they're all proprietarily blended. And what you'll usually see, because, you know, they still want to sell their stuff and market some of the tastes.
Yeah.
So if you look up how they taste, they'll usually include like a handful of the botanicals and then say, and, you know, and the rest are, you know, only for us to know, that kind of thing.
Right. We'd have to kill you. Right. We can tell you, but just prepare to die.
That's right.
I don't know if it's right, but sure. to make Amaro is actually very easy. You just take like a base alcohol, usually between 14 and I've seen as much as like 40-45% proof, or 45 proof, I should say. No, percent. That's right. Yeah. Proof is double the percentage, right?
80 to 90 proof.
Okay. And then you just soak some bittering agents and herbs, whatever your proprietary blend is. You let it soak for a little while. Sometimes you might redistill it with the herbs and botanicals in it. But a lot of people just let it sit for a while. And then I think that's called macerating or infusing, when you just basically say, here, gentian, meat, moonshine, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you add a little sugar after you filter out the solids, and then you let it age for several years, many years, however many years you want to wait. And then you've got yourself a bitter liqueur known as Amaro.
Yeah, and that base alcohol can vary. A lot of times it will be grappa, which is grape brandy, but not always. I see Dave put most, but I don't even know if I would say most, or would you say most?
I couldn't see. I have the impression that most Italian Amari is grappa, yes. Or wine.
Well, but what they don't do is like that kind of stuff isn't on the label because it doesn't really matter. Like, it matters, but when you get something like this, the bottle won't say, you know, with a base alcohol of like plain spirits or with grappa or with white wine or whatever.
Or white lightning.
Exactly. And the bitter is really sort of what it's all about. Italians are big on bitter. Espresso is very bitter. Mm-hmm. Radicchio, arugula, they've always sort of been on the leading edge of bitter things.
Yeah, I saw, Chuck, an Italian saying. I couldn't find the Italian, but it translates to, because of bitter, we know sweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they like their bitter. They appreciate it for sure.
And then it says, give us a kiss. Did you already say that Amaro meant bitter in Italian?
I don't think we did, actually.
Yeah, so there's the giveaway right there.
Right.
And bitter is something, I'm not sure if I was even on to bitter when we talked about the tongue episode. I don't think I was, because my bitter appreciation has really come on strong in the last like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I always hated bitter things.
Age, I would say.
Maybe, because I have noticed like different flavor profiles are hitting me in my elder years.
Right.
But things like espresso and like I don't sweeten any like coffees or I used to like sweeten lattes and things like that. But I love espresso now, and I love arugula and radicchio, and I love amaro. And so bitter is something I've really kind of grown on me, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, same here, especially as I've aged. I've always despised bitter stuff.
Yeah.
But now I can sometimes choke down a bite of grapefruit even.
Right. Oh, you know what? I haven't tried grapefruit in a while because I always said I didn't like it because it was bitter.
I like fresh squeezed grapefruit juice with fresh squeezed orange juice, about 1-to-1 ratio. Mm-hmm. That's okay. A really good jam. But just eating the grapefruit is a completely different experience than drinking the juice. And it's tough for me. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to have to try that. I can only think of my mom who, you know, 70s mom, that half a grapefruit on the kitchen table in the morning.
Yep.
And the little, was that weird little sort of two-sided knife thing that would carve out the sections?
A grapefruit spoon.
Well, it wasn't a spoon though. It was a knife.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about then. Maybe she saw it on TV.
It was a little knife with a very short blade, and both sides of the blade had a sort of odd serrated edge.
Okay.
But not like a steak knife serrated edge.
Right, right. Like a micro serrated edge almost, right?
Yeah, and then you would just sort of carve your way around it. And that's why both sides were done, because you would, you know, loop around the slice or whatever.
So I've seen spoons with that same serrated edge that are grapefruit spoons.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
I've not seen the knife, though. No. I wonder what the grapefruit fork looks like.
I have no idea. So should we talk about a few of the bittering agents?
Mm-hmm. There's like a big three, but the list is really extensive.
Yeah.
So you have gentian, which may be the most popular of all of them. It's a root that grows in the alpine, or it's a plant that grows in alpine regions. And its roots are prized for their bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up all over the place. Everything from Campari to some of the more like arcane, hardcore Amari.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in a lot of different stuff. And we should say it's not like you have to pick just one bittering agent.
Right.
A lot of people do, but you can kind of mix it up for your own proprietary blend. There's no rules.
Sure.
Actually, there are rules, and we'll get into them later.
Well, that's true. Wormwood, which we talked about in the absinthe episode, where we also mentioned the Gypsum's Malort. I mean, that's so bitter. And there's other things going on in there. Like, that's even too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the wormwood is a classic bittering agent. And it is, I'm not sure if we mentioned this in the absinthe, but it is an herb, a small-leafed herb.
Yeah,
that's kind of all over Europe.
Yeah, for sure. And then you've got cinchona.
I think it's cinchona.
Cinchona?
Yeah, I looked it up. I think we said cinchona a lot in the gin and tonic episode, and we were wrong.
Okay, so cinchona. Which is, I mean, how it's spelled, but it comes from, it's a tree. It's the bark of a tree in South America. It's where you get quinine, which they use to treat malaria, and is what gives tonic water its very bitter taste.
Yeah.
So a lot of Amari use cinchona in it, and you'll see on a label something that says China.
That's
but it's
China.
Actually, I think it's pronounced kina or kina.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the CH, I took Italian in college, and
sure.
The CH sound is a...
It could be a K.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just a CI would be the CH sound.
Wait, you took Italian?
Yeah, I took Italian.
Why aren't you doing the voice?
I never got it down. Yours is way better than mine. I could converse in it. I just couldn't offend them.
Right. You sounded like a guy Italian by way of Toledo?
Pretty much. Pretty much. I have a story about that. So...
All right.
I took French for like 3 years in high school and never cracked like the first layer of my brain cells. It just would not sit.
Yeah.
And then I got to college and I took Italian and it clicked. Like was Italian in my last life and lived to 110 or something. Like it clicked nice. Like that. And I made it all the way to the final. And this has never happened to me before. I sat down to take the final and it was gone. All of it.
Oh, no.
Gone. It was one of the most surprising things that's ever happened to me.
You just blanked?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it, and I couldn't get it back. So I did terrible on the final.
Wow.
I did well enough in class to still make a good grade, but it was more like, I don't like that my brain is capable of doing that.
Right. You know? Yeah, just crapping out when you
yeah.
most need it.
Yeah, it was like, sorry, pal, I'm sick today.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm yeah. sorry to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
I got accused of cheating on my German final in college.
Oh, yeah?
And was not able to prove my innocence.
Oh, no. Did you use...
I didn't cheat.
ChatGPT?
I just now remember that memory, and I don't remember what the rub was or why Frau whatever her name was thought I cheated, mm-hmm. but it was a thing, and I don't even remember, you know how you just block stuff out?
Right.
I don't remember the result of it, to be honest.
Well,
I just know I didn't cheat. That's the only thing I know.
Maybe one of her students is listening, and we'll get in touch with her, and she can get in touch with you and say, like, I believe you now, like your Shakespeare teacher.
Yeah, she could advance on it.
Right.
But they didn't mess around. You know, English professors don't go over to the foreign language departments. That's just not something you do.
I guess not.
So let's talk about some of these botanicals that can go in there, too, because we'll talk a little bit more, you know, throughout about the digestive properties of this, not only digestif, but I guess, what is it, aperitif as well?
Yeah, you know, like, not all Amari are digestifs, they're aperitifs as well, or you can use them both. It just depends on what side of a meal you drink it on, really, but they're supposed to be the same thing. Like, they're supposed to aid in digestion either before the meal or after the meal.
Right, and there are all kinds of great botanicals you can put in there.
Chuck, do you mind, speaking of singing?
Okay. Oh, do you have a song for this?
I mean, I was just going to read them off in kind of a sing-song way.
Please do.
We may or may not leave this in.
Okay.
Artichoke, orange peel, caraway and chamomile, coriander, kola nut, nutmeg and licorice, marjoram, cloves, cinnamon and fennel, quinoto in Italian, orange variety, rhubarb, angelica, myrrh and cardamom, comma green, star anise, and sarsaparilla. Not only the flavor of root beer, but a traditional treatment for syphilis, mint, orris, and yaupon holly, an evergreen shrub native to the American Southwest.
Wow. I wish you could have done that as Meagle.
Oh, man. I think the microphone would have exploded in ecstasy.
Yeah, this stuff you should know would have just like folded in on itself or something.
Right.
We'd wake up in some weird dimension.
Right.
You talked about the ABV. You know, generally it's known as, you said, you can get one that packs a punch. That's like a full, you know, 80 proof or so.
Mm-hmm.
But Amaro is generally known as a slightly lighter weight liqueur. And if you're looking for a not quite as boozy drink, you can have like an Amaro spritzer or something like that. And it's mm-hmm. usually a little tamed down from like a big liquor drink.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the point isn't to get hammered off of Amaro.
No.
I mean, you can if you want to, but that's certainly not the point of it.
Well, I've learned recently that too much Amaro in one sitting is like there's a digestive quality and then there's a digestive quality. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I know what you mean. Yeah, so, that's like, not what you want. That's not the point you want to attain.
No, one or two is great.
Sure.
And that's it.
Yeah. So I'm sure some people are out there thinking like, I know all this. You're talking about cocktail bitters, you morons. Why don't you just call them cocktail bitters? Well, that's because cocktail bitters are actually different. They're very, very, very similar, but they're different. And cocktail bitters are usually made using much higher proof alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Much higher amounts of bittering agents. I've seen as much as 50% of the total content could be a bittering agent. So they're super bitter. And oftentimes there's no additional sugar. So they wouldn't constitute a liqueur. What's more is you're only supposed to use a few drops, a dash or two of cocktail bitters. Whereas with an Amaro, you actually drink like an ounce or two. Like it's a drink. It's not something you add to a drink. But they're so close that people differentiate cocktail bitters and Amari by calling Amari potable or drinkable bitters or just bitter liqueur.
Wait, is there alcohol in bitters?
Oh, yes. Like you usually start with something like moonshine or white lightning.
Really?
Or like 151 proof rum. Yeah.
How do they get away with selling that in grocery stores Or do they?
Because you drink so little of it. I mean, even anybody who needed to drink more than anybody else would not turn up a bottle of bitters. I would put money on it never having happened.
My granddad probably would have.
Oh yeah?
He was one of those alcoholics.
Well, anyone who's ever made a bet with me knows I'm really good at making terrible bets.
Well, he was one of those like 1940s alcoholics that like, hey, the mouthwash has booze in it and there's nothing else in the house, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'll bet he still wouldn't have drank a bottle of bitters. I don't think you could.
You know, they may not sell it in grocery stores here.
No, they
now
do.
That I think about it. They do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I know people like in Los Angeles, you can buy, you know, their liquor. There's liquor in grocery stores.
Right.
There.
There's liquor in their drug stores. It's so bizarre.
It is very strange. It's super convenient, though.
It is very convenient. But in grocery stores, you can buy Angostura usually, which is like, I mean, that's the universal bitter.
Yeah, which is great. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Vermouth. Now, this is where I'm going to lean on you a little bit. But vermouth and Amaro do have a lot in common. And it is also an alcohol. It is also infused with bitters and botanicals,
mm-hmm.
and it is also bittersweet and used as a bitter sweetening agent
mm-hmm.
in cocktails.
Right,
it is very wormwood forward, but in fact, I believe it's the French spelling of the German word for wormwood, which is vermouth.
Right,
with a W.
Right.
Does that make sense?
it totally makes sense. And vermouth, it bears a striking resemblance to Amaro because, like we said earlier, Some Amari have wine as their base, not grappa or another spirit. So, I mean, the distinction between a vermouth and a vino Amaro, as it's called, is found in the fact that your vermouth is actually spiked with booze, typically brandy.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there differentiates it. But by spiking a wine with booze, you've created what's like a class called a fortified wine.
It's yeah.
fortified with booze. Meaning
like sherry
will,
is a
mess
fortified
you up.
Wine.
Sherry, vermouth, port.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch of other like specific wines, like Bonal is really good fortified wine. But there's a subclass of fortified wine called an aromatized wine. And
right.
vermouth is technically an aromatized wine because that is a fortified wine that has many of the same botanicals and bittering agents that you'll find in Amari, right? The difference, again, is that in Amari, they don't spike it like a vino Amaro with an extra bit of booze. It's that extra booze in vermouth that is the only thing that differentiates it from some kinds of Amaro.
Right. And vermouth Amaro. Always has to have the wine component, and yep. Amaro doesn't necessarily have to, right?
No, that's right.
I'm going to recommend, and I hope people that are into this kind of thing have their pencil and pad out to write down some of these recs, but... Mm-hmm. For you as well, my friend, I found a very nice sweet vermouth that is made in Napa Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Called the Mathiasen, and it is really tasty.
I will check that out. I'm a Carpano Antica person myself.
Yeah, I mean, those are classics, but this is a nice small batch
sure.
handmade in America kind of thing.
I will definitely try it. I will try it, especially if they mail it to us for free.
We we should try a break.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes in. We got so excited.
Wait, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking lemon water.
Oh, okay.
Spiked with moonshine.
All right, we'll be right back, everyone. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
You know, I was going to make the joke that I'm a method podcaster by having this Amaro, and then I remembered that that was one of the very first things I said on the show.
You did.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course I remember. I think that was your first episode, right?
Very first episode, orange juice and toothpaste.
Right. You long have been a method podcaster. I mean, you were talking about eating honey butter in the honey episode.
Yeah.
Eating honey butter in the toast episode. yeah, you're a method podcaster for sure.
Should we talk about the pretty interesting history of Amaro?
Yeah, because it tracks pretty closely to the history of spirits and booze as in general, essentially.
Yeah, and shout out, because Dave used this book for a lot of this research from a mixologist from Italy named Matteo Zed, called The Big Book of Amaro, no colon, that's it.
It's awesome. Congratulations,
I love that.
Matteo Zed.
So refreshing.
Who is not dead.
He was like, oh, you can use a colon? He didn't even know.
I don't want these jackasses to use that stupid colon thing again.
You sounded like Italian by way of the Bronx.
That's what I'm saying. I don't do it very well. That's why you're the Italian accent guy.
I thought you were about to say the Italian stallion.
I'll call you that too, especially if you sing around me more.
All right. So if you want to talk about basically distillation as a whole, you need to go back to Arab alchemists in the 7th and 8th centuries, which is who learn how to do this stuff. And pretty soon after they learn how to get ethanol going, they said, you know what, we should start infusing it and drinking it, because infusing things is, you know, probably as old as time, because not only does it impart flavor to something that you're drinking, but in many cases, and that's true with Amaro early on, it was a way to actually preserve the botanicals and the herbs. It makes them last longer.
Right. And they also figured out that they could distill more than just fermented alcohol or alcohol from fermented liquid. They could distill the essential oils from all those things too.
Yeah.
And then mix that together. And they were like, these essential oils, they really pack a punch. They must be incredibly medicinal. And so the earliest cocktails, the earliest reason that people were putting together spirits and botanicals was for medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
And they think that the first cocktail was probably a julep or julab, which means rose water, which ironically was probably an infusion of violets rather than roses, with sugar and alcohol, which would make it a liqueur because there's alcohol that's sugared. And it sounds a lot like creme de violette, which is a great creme liqueur.
I've never had that.
Chuck, it's so good. Have you ever had an aviation?
I've had aviation gin, but not an aviation.
Okay, so it's gin, probably pretty good with aviation gin, and creme de violette, and I think a little maraschino liqueur, and it is beautiful, but it's this gorgeous violet, light purpley color.
Oh, interesting. Just,
it's really gorgeous. And I think there's another one called Blue Moon that uses it too, but those are like the big two. but it's a creme liqueur, not a cream liqueur, a creme liqueur. And I found out from this research that they call it creme because these types of liqueurs have so much sugar in it that it gives it almost a creamy texture.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But a creme liqueur would actually have some sort of cream to it. This is a creme liqueur. So creme de violette, creme de menthe, it just means there's so much sugar in it that you could stand a straw up in it, basically.
I never knew that.
I didn't either until like yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So did you think there was a dairy agent to those things?
I didn't because it's clearly not there, you know, but I thought maybe they like creamed the violets or something, like it was part of the process.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. Now my eyes are wide open.
I said, just go milk that flower.
Right. And bring me some creme from it.
So these, the things that these Arab alchemists were doing, eventually, of course, found their way to Italy. Mm-hmm. And this is like 12th, 13th century. And if you want to get some booze made, there are a lot worse places to go than your local monastery.
For sure.
They've always been big on it. And the monks got a hold of it. And in the year 1300, a very sort of lucky, unlucky thing happened at the same time, which is Pope Boniface the VIII got kidney stones and was at least thought cured in part by this alcoholic infusion of bitter roots and herbs. Mm-hmm. And if you want to like really market your product in 1300, say this is the stuff that saved the Pope.
Right, exactly. And a lot of those monks too were alchemists. So, and this is definitely where that comes together, alchemy and monasteries creating their own blend of aqua vitae or elixir of life. Mm-hmm. And again, they're taking this stuff to do all sorts of curative or therapeutic stuff. They were medicinal drinks, but it didn't take them very long to figure out. It gives you a pretty good buzz, too. And by the 16th century, I believe, people were like, just give me that. I want to drink it. I don't have anything wrong with me. I'm not trying to do anything different.
I don't want a prescription.
I just want to drink this stuff because it's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And then when the sugar from the New World arrived in Europe, and the spice trade was so robust and all these spices were coming in from the East and South America and from the South, all of a sudden, you had everything you needed. And I think in the 17th century, Venice and Florence had a really robust spice trade going on. And of course, they kind of spread that to the different monasteries that were making this booze.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, you had this sugary component and more spices. And this is kind of when, like, Amaro, as we know it today, feels like it was really born.
Yeah, for sure. One of the reasons it was born in Italy was because it was such a crossroad. Like you were saying, there's all these spices making their way to it, and they already had this tradition that they'd gotten from their Arab friends of making these medicinal liqueurs. So they were just making them better and better. And then by the 18th and 19th centuries, apothecaries and pharmacists were like, give me those. I'm going to start selling these. And then eventually it transmuted from, which is appropriate because we're talking about alchemy, from a medicinal drink, again, or some sort of elixir that was meant to make you feel better, to just straight up booze. And at that point, it became like, it really took off in the 19th century.
Yeah, and that's, if you look at, not all of them, but like most of the classic Amari that you'll find from Italy in the modern liquor stores today will have some sort of 19th century date on the bottle, very proudly.
Yeah.
They've been around for a long time. Campari, like you said, is kind of the, like if you're putting together a bar for the first time and you look up like, what kinds of different things should I get that aren't just like, you know, the main liquors, Campari will probably be on that list. it's that red, in the clear bottle, that red liqueur that you see that when you don't know what it is, you're like, I've seen that thing at every bar I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. And I just never knew what it was. And Gaspare Campari, who was from Nevada, Italy, started experimenting in the 1840s with the recipe, didn't finalize it till close to 20 years later in 1860, and opened up Cafe Campari in Milan. And that's where the drink, the Americano, was born, which is very simple. It's Campari, Italian vermouth, and some soda water.
Right. And in this case, the Americano is not named after us Americans. Amer is the French word for bitter. So this is a play on that. Americano is a bitter drink. And you mentioned how bright red Campari is. It actually comes from carmine, the big ragu, which is a natural dye that they make from a certain kind of insect, the cochineal insect. They crush it up, they dry it out, crush it up, and it creates this red powder that's been used as a dye for centuries.
Yeah, and they did that all the way until 2006, which is really surprising. Now it's synthesized, but I believe, you know, there are some sort of small batch of Mari that are made around the world that still use this method of crushing the bugs.
Definitely. There's one. So that whole thing, remember, Aperol, Campari, they're called red bitters. That's their classification. There's a whole bunch of red bitters out there. And one of them, Cappelletti, has been using carmine the whole time and still does. Mm-hmm. And I read that it's actually a much better ingredient in a Negroni because it's less sweet than Campari. So it has like a more balanced finish. And I don't think I've ever read many more words that made me want to try a liqueur more than that.
Oh, because do you usually not like a Negroni?
I love a Negroni. That's the thing.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
I'm into like an improved Negroni.
Right.
I mean, give it to me.
A Negroni Plus. I love a Negroni, too. It's a great drink.
And the Negroni actually came from, where did it come from?
I don't know.
It came from somebody's cafe. I want to say it came from Cafe Campari, yeah. But there was a count whose name was Negroni. And I can't remember his first name. I can't find him anywhere. But it was at Cafe Campari, Count Camillo Negroni. In 1920, he was a customer there at Cafe Campari. He said, I like this Americano.
Yeah,
pretty good. Can you give me something different? And the bartender swapped out the soda water with gin.
Right.
And the first Negroni was made. And Count Camillo Negroni was canonized the very next day.
Oh, that's an interesting trade. Oh, I'll swap out the soda water for gin.
Right. This soda water is a waste of space.
There's Amaro Averna. It's a very popular Amaro. It's much sweeter. Mm-hmm. This is from 1868 was when they first started bottling this stuff. And this was one that came straight from Sicilian monks to a guy named Salvatore Averna. Mm-hmm. And it was like sort of the thing he did for friends and family for a little while. And then his son said, hey, Papa, we should sell this stuff.
And he said, go with God if you want to. I'm just going to be sitting over here in the shade.
What about Montenegro? That's your jam, right?
Yeah, I love it. It was originally called Elixir Lunga Vita, the elixir of life. It's made with 40 botanicals, which is a middling amount of botanicals typically for Amaro. It's like right there in the middle, which is appropriate because Amaro Montenegro is like a really good introduction to like real Amari. Mm-hmm. But it came from Bologna, Italy, back in 1885, created by a guy named Stanislao Cobianchi. And he was so enthralled with Princess Elena of Montenegro, who became Queen of Italy in 1900, that he renamed his Amari Amaro Montenegro.
I love that story. And that is, I saw a couple of great, there are at least two really good YouTube videos from Amaro enthusiasts. And they, one was this guy, I think he was originally from Italy. Mm-hmm. And then one was this Scottish woman who, of course, loved that accent. And they're like 9, 10, 11 minutes each, and they do a really good job of sort of, you know, if you've never tried Amari, then here are like 10 different kinds that range from what the guy referred to as sort of like pastry-esque all the way to super medicinal tasting.
Right.
And the one they had in the middle is one I have on my shelf called the Lucano, but they both described Montenegro as a really good gateway Amaro for someone who's never really tried it, which makes me think, I still don't have a bottle. I'm going to get one soon, but that it's that has an accessibility factor to it.
Definitely. And it's really useful in cocktails too, because it's very sweet. As far as Amari go, it's a pretty sweet Amaro. And like Montenegro, like many others, got a rich golden color. Some of them have caramel color, some are brownish. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them really kind of share in common, like they have a brown taste. Like you could taste it, and if somebody who had already had it before, if you described it as brown, they would probably get what you were talking about. It's not just the color, the taste too. But there's another kind of Amaro that's been around. It might be the oldest surviving continuously made Amaro recipe.
Ooh.
And it comes from France, Chartreuse.
of course.
Which is another thing you've seen on American bars for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's
a huge firm bar thing. But Chartreuse Vert in particular is green.
Yeah.
And it's been, it was first brewed in like the 1730s, but it came from a recipe in 1605. And again, it's monks in a monastery making these recipes. And still to this day, Chuck, there's only two monks at any given time who know the exact recipe. And they're the ones, again, still to this day, who order and blend the botanicals. And then they hand the blended herbs and spices off to the distillers who then take it and use it. But only two of them know what's
That's
in
amazing.
There. And there's 132 botanicals in Chartreuse.
That is really something.
And then here's the fact of the podcast for me. The color Chartreuse got its name from the liqueur Chartreuse, not the other way around.
It's older than the color.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that Chartreuse blouse you're wearing, it's named after Chartreuse Vert, the Amaro.
All right, let's take a break. I've spilled some Amaro on my blouse, and I need to go put the hair dryer on it, and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Okay, so we're back, and one of the things you mentioned very early on and repeatedly is that Amari is typically used as a digestif. You have a big old meal, eat a big steak, eat 3-4 dozen oysters, have a lobster the size of like a VW Beetle that you just ate.
All sounds so good.
A bunch of tacos. You might want to do a shot, but don't do a shot. You could do a shot, but you don't really want to do a shot. You want to sip Amaro, right? And then really enjoy the taste of it. But you'll be aiding in digestion. True or false, Chuck?
Yeah, I mean, kind of true. I don't know there's been like lab studies, but the reasoning behind it is pretty sound, I think. I don't think it's like a big reach and it's like, oh, it's good for you, so it's fine to drink. But it sounds like it probably does what other bitter things do to your body. When the body, you know, gets a bitter taste in its mouth, we have evolved to think that might be poison because there are so many bad plants in the world that are bitter.
Right.
And that's a sure sign like, hey, don't eat this thing. And so the logic is basically you get a little Amaro and your body says, hey, this is a low level poison kind of coming into my body. Right. So let me kick this digestion off and see if we can work that through our system as quickly as possible. And then you've got all these like herbs and botanicals and things that mm-hmm. also can, you know, aid in digestion mm-hmm. and have natural anti-inflammatory properties. And yeah, that's why it sort of has that medicinal taste to it, is because it is slightly medicinal. I don't think it's some snake oil cure-all or anything, but right. I believe it's a legit digestive.
Plus also, a lot of those herbs are like hepatoprotective, so it helps right. your liver while it's processing all of that alcohol. If you're going to drink a booze, you could do a lot worse as right. far as like your systems are concerned. But on the other hand, there is a lot of criticism of drinking some Amaro after a meal, especially a big meal, because alcohol actually slows digestion by as much as 50%.
Right.
So it's actually slowing down your digestion, making you feel fuller longer. Plus, it's extra calories that you have to now process. But on the other hand, the alcohol is a vasodilator, so it keeps your muscles from tightening, which means that your stomach can expand a little more to make you feel a little more relieved if you're super full.
So the net is it does nothing.
I don't know. It might. I think I get the impression that aperitifs do more to stimulate appetite and get your juices going literally than a digestif. And that what I saw was that you're much better off just spritzing some actual bitters, like cocktail bitters, before a meal. And that would probably be the best way to actually do it.
Yeah, Emily will spray bitters in her mouth and stuff.
Yeah,
occasionally, and that's probably the way to do it.
Yeah, before the meal.
Yeah, but like I said, you're not, even if you're drinking Amaro the right way, you're not drinking a ton of it.
Right.
So like an Amaro after a meal probably isn't like the worst thing in the world for you.
No, but also it's not like even if you're drinking it as a digestive, what you're really doing is just finishing this meal in a really like luxurious, like calm way.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. That's really the point of it.
Yeah, so I promised my Amaro history, and I will shorten the story to this, which is I hadn't had it very much at all until, like in various drinks, like Negronis and things, but not on its own, mm-hmm. and it wasn't something I really kept in stock. Mm-hmm. Until about two-ish years ago, I follow the actor Walton Goggins on Instagram, and he makes his own liquor. He makes Mulholland whiskey and gin, which are both great. Really love the whiskey. And I'm a huge fan of his. And he made a cocktail of just half bourbon and half Amaro de Angostura. Angostura makes their own like full size Amaro. Mm-hmm. Same company who makes the bitters. And a little like orange peel, I think. Express those oils in there and rub it around the rim and then just drop it in. And so I bought a bottle of it and I tried it and I loved it. Mm-hmm. And then started collecting another Amaro here or there. And then this year at Christmas, we had an open house on Christmas Day this year for the first time, mm-hmm. which, have you ever had an open house type of party?
My parents have. I never have.
I think it was an Ohio thing, because I got this from Emily's parents. They used to do it, too. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what it is, it's basically when you host a party that's not like, show up at 6 and leave at midnight. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, the house will be open from noon to 6. Drop by for a drink. Stay if you want, but you can just breeze through as well. Mm-hmm. And we did that this year, and we had so much fun.
Yeah.
And my friend Thomas, who is the father of one of Ruby's friends and has become a friend of mine, brought as a very generous gift 3 different Amaros for me.
Wow.
And he's the kind of guy that just really loves to, he's very generous and loves to share knowledge and turn people on to things. So he brought me Foro, F-O-R-O, mm-hmm. Which is... sort of have, it's very much sweeter, has like a coffee taste to it.
Yeah, there's definitely coffee Amari.
Yeah, that's one of them. He brought me Maletti, which I'm having now.
Okay.
Which is sort of your standard dark bitter.
Okay.
And then the one I like the most is the Lucano. It looks sort of like the St. Pauli girl in the bottle. You've probably seen it before.
Yeah, I've seen like old vintage posters of Lucano stuff. I've never
had it. And Lucano's super bitter. I don't think, I've never had any of the Fernets. That's next on my list.
You're not going to like them.
Really? Because I'm into the bitter. Is it it's so not, bitter it's not good?
It's bitter. It's a whole other class of thing. It's not pleasant. I don't understand people who like Fernet.
Is it like the Malort thing?
A little bit, but menthol-y.
Oh, interesting.
It is interesting, and people do like it, but I mean, I'll be surprised if you're a Fernet guy.
Okay.
And, you know, let me know for sure, but I'll be surprised.
I think, is it Fernet Branca is the most popular?
Yeah, let's talk about this. So Fernet, is that the end of your story? Because it was a good story.
It made me want
to go out and buy some Amari.
Yeah, big thanks to Thomas.
And also to make friends with Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Fernet is, it's class called a Branca. Or no, it's called a Fernet.
Yeah.
Branca is the brand of Fernet that's most popular, Fernet Branca.
That's right.
And it is menthol flavored, super bitter. It's a really, really weird drink.
Mm-hmm.
But it is lifeblood in Argentina.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. In fact, one of the most popular cocktails in Argentina is the Fernando or Fernandito,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, a 1-3. So 2 ounces of Fernet with 6 ounces of Coke. And that's it.
Wow.
And it's a great hangover cure, and people are nuts for it. And they're so crazy for it. Argentina consumes 75% of Fernet Branca made worldwide.
Wow. How much?
75%, 3/4 of the Fernet Branca made in the entire world is drunk in Argentina.
Wow.
Because they love that drink so much.
All right. If I ever go to Argentina, I'll try it out.
I think I want to try that. I mean, it sounds like something way more than just the Fernet. Like they combine together to make something really special. So I would try that. But if I never have like a sip of Fernet Branca again, I won't be. It'll be too soon.
Well, there is a cola-esque element to some Amaros. So I can see
wait,
how
Chuck. I can't wait till we start getting all the emails there. Like you guys said, you never say Amaros, you used to say Amari, and then you proceeded to say Amaros like 10 times.
Did I just say Amaros?
Yeah, we both have.
Oh boy, no, that's right. What about the artichoke one? I saw it pronounced Chinar.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one that you've probably noticed the bottle because it has an artichoke on the front of it,
right?
And you might be thinking, well, that's a weird thing to have on the front of a liquor bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it's made from. It's from Venice, created in the 1950s. So it's I guess as far as Amari go, it's a newer Amari,
mm-hmm.
or Amaro. See, there I go. And that is, artichoke is a Mediterranean thistle. And I have not tried this, but I'm eager to.
It's fine. It doesn't taste like artichoke at all, but I find the label off-putting.
Oh, you don't like that artichoke looking at you?
No, I really don't. Again, it doesn't taste anything like artichoke, but,
right.
You know, to make artichoke the mascot of your Amaro, clearly they're doing fine because Chinar is another really popular one in the U.S., but I'm not crazy for it because of that stupid artichoke on the label.
I think it looks cool. I think it looks like a 70s something or other.
Definitely, but it's still an artichoke, and you're drinking an artichoke is what it seems like.
On the lighter side, we did mention Montenegro, but there's another one I wanted to shout out that's very popular called Nonino.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it in a lot of shelves. And if you've ever had a paper plane, you've probably had Nonino in it.
Yeah. A paper plane is Nonino, Aperol, bourbon, and lemon juice, I think equal parts.
Oh, Aperol as well. Interesting.
Yeah, or red bitter, but yeah, Aperol.
Okay. They double up on it.
They definitely do. But I mean, that just goes to show how different Amaro or Amari is, because you can put 2 Amari in a drink and it's not like just 2 of the same thing, you know?
How about this? I love the description of the Elixir Novosalis.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Alpine Amaro, I think very piney.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave dug up this great quote from a writer named Chuck Taggart, a cocktail writer, that said, a sip of Elixir Novosalis tastes like you're getting kicked in the crotch by a tree.
Yeah.
I love descriptors like that are weird, but totally nail it.
Yeah. It's supposed to be so bitter. It's just crazy, which is all the more surprising that it's a vino Amaro. So its base is wine. But like you said, it's Alpine. And in the Alpine class of Amaro it definitely has like a piney tree kind of thing going on, woodsy. And my favorite is one called Zurben Stone Pine Liqueur.
Oh, okay.
And if you look at descriptions, so go on to, if this is like floating your boat at all, go on to House Alpens, ALPENZ.com, and just start following links, and you'll end up in the coolest rabbit hole ever. But they are one of the suppliers of Zurbens, maybe the only one. And in other descriptions of Amari, they'll say, like, enjoy it on its own or with just a little citrus twist or whatever. And then they'll go into all the other things you can use that Amaro for. With Zurbens, they say basically, like, you should mix this with other stuff. You don't really want to drink it on its own. Because it's so piney. They literally make it from pine cones. That's how piney it is. But
oh,
it's
wow.
really good. It's really weird. It's its own thing. It's like, it's just its own thing. I strongly recommend just trying it at least once.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. I got nothing else. Were there any other Amaris we need to go over?
That time was purposeful, wasn't it? I don't think so. We should give a shout out to American Amari that's starting to kind of make a thing. I know Leopold's has one, and I think St. George has one. There's a bunch of other ones too.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. There's all kinds of creative things happening in the United States with in terms of distilling things. So, of course, they're on board with Amaro.
So, what's your next bottle?
Well, I guess I got to get a bottle of Montenegro.
Okay, yeah, to buy that, but then also what's your other next bottle? Like, you're going to want not just that one, because you'll taste it and be like, oh, this is good. I've already kind of passed this point.
I think the piney one you were just talking about.
The Zurbens?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what's your third one? You might actually want another one, too. You might, because you might be frustrated with those two, if those are your two next ones.
Well, you tell me that. I feel like you're leading me to a choice.
I'm not. I'm honestly not.
Oh, well, those are the two, and then I should try a Fernet.
Okay. You're about to have like a losing streak of Amaro.
Oh, no. That will negate my winning streak.
You'll come out the other end, though.
All right.
Okay. Well, since Chuck said all right, everybody, that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Honey PSA, which was pretty interesting. This is from Taylor Haddon. It said, hey guys, toward the end of the episode on honey, you listed off all the amazing properties. I don't know if this came up in your research, but for people with fructose intolerance, like my husband, it also has the major property of being anti-not in the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
Or I guess that would be pro-not in the bathroom, now that I think about it. So few people know that you can be intolerant to fructose anyway, just like so many of us are intolerant to lactose, and honey is one of the worst substances that he can eat, along with agave syrup.
Wow.
It's even worse than high fructose corn syrup.
Wow.
And fruits that are high in fructose, like apples and tomatoes. It took him such a long time to figure out what was causing his stomach troubles, because so few people know that they can be affected like this. And fun fact, because fructose pairs with dextrose to make glucose, a person who is fructose intolerant can take dextrose to negate some of the consequences.
Crazy.
Just like a person with lactose intolerance can take Lactaid.
Wow.
And get this, it gets even better. This is a great email. Conveniently, Smarties candy is 100% dextrose, so my husband has stashes of them everywhere.
Wow.
And it's always a funny moment when we're eating pizza with new people and they wonder why he's snacking on Smarties as an appetizer.
Crazy.
That is great. Thanks for the show. It's seriously wonderful. You bring joy and excitement to so many topics. And your well-researched style gives me inspiration when teaching my ninth grade English students how to find sources. And that is teacher Taylor Haddon. And hello to your ninth grade English class.
Yeah, hello, Ms. Haddon's ninth grade class, right?
Yeah, and your hubs.
Yeah. And Chuck, we should also say a few people wrote in and were like, guys, you probably should have also mentioned that you shouldn't feed honey to a baby under 1 year of age.
Yeah.
Which I think we talked about in some other episode before, but yes, it bears repeating because their little immune systems are so fragile and botulin can be found in honey that they can suffer botulism, which you do not want a baby to have.
Yeah, I think we added that it was in the episode, hey, don't feed that baby that thing.
Right, that was a great episode. We're like, and what about this thing? Oh yeah, don't feed a baby that.
Don't do it.
Well, thanks a lot, Taylor. And if you want to be like Taylor, you can get in touch with us via email at stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? will sip on pure, refreshing Richard's rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.